Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Statistics might suggest that if you're listening to a podcast like this, then you may well fall into the millennial age bracket. Maybe not, people of all ages listen, but millennials make up a big percentage of those listening to podcasts. Today we're taking a look at what studies have suggested millennials are like, their character, the things they value, the things they desire, and in that context, we're talking about how to best evangelise millennials. But before all that, a follow-up question from our episode on spiritual gifts.
Hi, I'm Mark Bentham.
I am Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary.
Ordinary.
That's our new jingle.
That's not the new jingle.
Oh, come on. It could work, though, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. Right, today we're having a conversation about millennials that is about basically evangelism.
To do with evangelizing millennials. You're a millennial.
Okay, perfect. I am a millennial, yes, but I'm already evangelized. So you're preaching to the choir, man. But before we get into that sort
preaching
of thing...
Preaching to the choir is not the sort of thing a millennial would say.
That's true.
You've been influenced
by...
eclectic millennial. One of your millennial friends has messaged a question, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So a few weeks ago, perhaps, at this point, we did a podcast on spiritual gifts. I guess we talked about the range of views that there are to do with spiritual gifts and how they work now. And I have a question for you, or some comments and a question, perhaps, is the right way to put this. Okay, here we go. Let me read this out. In their arguments, that's referring to you two, in their argument against how spiritual gifts can be misused and overemphasized, yes, this is true, but you could say that for anything. Anything good, if mistreated or misapplied, can result in bad. Yes, it's right to be careful, but just because some people can misuse spiritual gifts doesn't mean we have to keep clear of them. To me, it seems pretty clear in the Bible that spiritual gifts is a thing. I don't really understand why, because it wasn't mentioned in the latter letters, which is what you said, Graham, that makes a difference. These are post-Jesus churches using these things now, so why should it be different now? What's more, it's clear in my experience that God does use prophecy and tongues and healing quite obviously. So if they are being used in a way that Graham and Mark said they shouldn't, then what is happening there? Surely the fact that it does happen frequently points to the fact that it is correct, unless it's from the devil or something like that. And lastly, I think being open but cautious basically means nothing. If your cautiousness means that there is no real teaching or emphasis on spiritual gifts, then I don't think you can say you're open.
Yeah. Taking the last bit first, and thank you very much for the question, questioner. Mm-hmm. And we really would love lots more questions.
Yeah, we love that.
Yeah, this is really good, the people interacting. I think it is a fair cop to say that in practice, we don't look a lot different to a cessationist kind of church. I think why we're trying to use that phrase open along with the caution is to say that we're not at the level of being adamant that it's definitely ceased. Every activity of God in the miraculous has ceased, or dismissive of people's experiences or other churches who have different views. So that's what we're trying to say. So yeah, at one level you're right. Maybe it's a cop out, and actually in practice we're cessationists. But I think we're trying to express something much more charitable and much more open than just simply we're a cessationist. And I think coming back to some of the sort of earlier arguments, that they were kind of things we went around and back a bit in the discussion itself. I think the lack of emphasis on them in the later letters does mean something. Your question implies that it has no significance whatsoever, and I think it does in terms of priority, if nothing else, in terms of priority, and just the quantity, you know, and that it's in terms of church practice, it's only mentioned in one place in the New Testament. It's not even just to do with early late; it's to do with how much material is given over to it, and I think where we are open is more to do with God working as he pleases, and where we're cautious is to thinking this is a general way in which God works. And I think, you know, you can always argue from experience, well, you know, I saw this person healed, or I heard someone speaking in tongues and it seemed to be real, or I had this prophetic word. I don't think you can really argue from experience, because lots of things could be happening. God in his grace could be working in that way. It could be just a coincidence. You can't really say. So that doesn't really give it authority. The authority has to come from, so how do you interpret the Bible? And I think where we've landed in our interpreting the Bible is, it's not a priority. It doesn't seem to be a distinct mission, sorry, ministry that carries on after the completion of the scriptures. But God's completely free to do what he wants, and we're not trying to restrict him. Is that fair? Did I get a bit lost in that?
Just to push you on that then. So yeah. what would you say is happening in places where people would say, clearly God is working in those ways? Do you think when there are healings, when there are people giving prophecy that completes or becomes true, what are you saying, that those things are demonic, or are you saying that those things are people are just, it's confirmation bias? What are you saying?
Well, I think the first thing on all of that is to say, probably, I can't back it step, but I think it's true to say the vast majority of churches around the world would hold to a similar position to us. In other words, they would not be on the charismatic element, where there would be prophecy, tongues, healing in their services. Now, again, you can't argue from experience, but that says something in terms of, if this was such a something to be had in all churches, you would expect, therefore, that the majority would be doing that. If they're not, are they therefore being disobedient? And I think, you know, so you are ranging of issues there. And in terms of where that is happening, sometimes it's just, I think it's a priority issue. So, and I think, you know, no one quite knows what tongues is. You know, what is that? In terms of prophecy, I think sometimes it's a language issue. In other words, if someone said in our church, I was praying for you the other day, and as I was praying for you, this verse just came to mind, and they share that verse with that other person, and they go, gosh, that really helps me, that really resonates, actually, gosh, that's this week in how it worked out. We would say, you know, that is of God, that's his spiritual work, is the Spirit working, leading believers, encouraging believers. Now, I think in certain circles, you would then label that prophecy. And more than that, you want to heighten that to an issue where you want to make that a priority in the services. And I think what we're saying is, we recognize things like that happen and are good, and we want to encourage, you know, people, you know, speaking and being nudged by the Spirit in that way. But I don't think we see it as a priority in the service.
If I was at home contemplating taking my own life, and someone at their home felt compelled to give me a call, send me a message or whatever. They felt like God was telling them they ought to send me a message. Then, you know, what do I do with that? I don't suddenly say, oh, you're a prophet and I need to give you a label. You know, I'd say God in his amazing providence has prompted you to do that. Sometimes he does it very specifically. Sometimes it just happens that, you know, someone calls around because they were, you know, dropping back something that they lent to you, but either way they stopped me taking my own life, and that was a good intervention of God. I don't think we need to give it a label other than, like, you know, I think God is gracious.
And what about, just to keep pushing though, yeah, what about the more
the healing
or the more predictive prophecy?
Again, you know, I'm not sure, and I may be wrong, but I don't think most charismatics would talk about predictive prophecy. I think they talk about prophecy in the way in which we've just spoken about it.
They would sometimes speak about a word that says, you know, we need to move to Burgess Hill with King's Church sales.
Right, and then
that.
So I think...
They would.
And we've had people say that within our church, and I think we would weigh it, and in the times we have, it's generally not been right. So, you know, but is that a predictive... That's not predictive in the sense that we've got to move and therefore it will happen. That's a sense that this is of the Lord. And, you know, do we have that? You know, as we're praying, do we think, actually, gosh, as we're thinking about the life of the church and as I pray about it, I get a sense of this is where we've got to lead the church. In that sense, it's not predictive. Predictive is not in the way... In fact, most of the prophecy in the Old Testament is not predictive. Actually, most of it is reapplying God's word of covenant that he's already said into the lives of the people. The predictive prophecy is very small in terms of the prophetic language. So I think in all of that, I think healing, again, you know, we would talk about praying for people's healing. But I think, as we said last time, we want it more than that. You know, we want more than just physical healing. Because I think what actually happens is we narrow down into, we want the miraculous of the physical healing. And I think God's purposes are far greater often. So, you know, you the whole thrust of a book like 1 Peter is all about suffering now, enduring, doing good whilst you're in trial. James 1 would be a similar kind of picture. And so therefore, actually, we're praying for someone who is sick. Of course, we want them to be physically healed. We pray in the Lord's goodness and mercy. But actually, God may choose to do something far greater.
But there's no healing that's going on that's anywhere near the scale of what Jesus and the disciples could achieve. So how anyone could think the greater works are the healings that are going on now. You know, you think if you know, there were people healing coronavirus and, you know, cancer and everything else in churches on a scale like Jesus could, you know, where he's got people lining up outside, you know, Peter's mother-in-law's house or wherever, all the sick came and, you know, and he healed them for a whole night. You know, that's not happening anywhere where that level of healing is happening. You know, it would be on the news. It would be like 1, 2, 3, 4 on BBC News, other than coronavirus being on there. So I just don't think that scale of healing is happening in practice. You know, so I just can't see it.
And I think it's
now, maybe that's, you know, lack of faith. The problem is with all of these things is you become a bit defensive, and you know, end up denying the spiritual interaction, the experiential. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to commune with God, communicate with Him, but also hear from Him and be open to His Spirit prompting us. And the trouble is you get all a bit technical in these kind of discussions and push away the interaction with God in our lives, which we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, that's useful.
Thanks for the question, though. Yeah, we'll come back with more.
Yeah, that's a great question, definitely. Definitely come back with more. We probably should jump on to
Malels
and evangelising them. Are you going to give us a summary and then some tips? Or what?
No, I think let's describe what we think is... How would you define a Malel? As in terms of...
character or age?
Well, age is the easier one.
Yeah.
Generally born between 85 and 95. Mm-hmm. So they're generally in their 20s, early 30s right now. What would be the characteristics?
Well, I think there's distinctions between millennials and boomers in the way they look at the world and in their expectations of what the world's going to give them. I buy into Simon Sinek's kind of summary of this when he says that millennials were taught that the world was their oyster, they could achieve anything, they can do anything, and they were really propped up emotionally and made it a priority. And what happens is when they then leave school and go into the workplace, they're kind of disenfranchised by the fact that they're actually just nobody and they've got to work hard every single day of their life and life's not going to give them stuff. And so I think you find a lot of millennials jumping around jobs and jumping around in all kinds of ways trying to find purpose because they feel a lack of that in their real experience of real life once they've become an adult. That's what I think.
They're also characterised by a lifelong use of technology, information technology. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the generation below would be the iPhone gen. So, yeah. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, they have had it. I mean, not as much as
maybe
the generation below.
No, maybe you've got a point there.
They're probably...
Most of their lives.
But they're tech-savvy, right. Definitely. Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I think it's Jean... It's not I think. I know. Jean... Twenge, I think so, say her name, is kind of, she's written both iPhone Generation, that's the name of her book, but she's also written Generation Me. Mm. And so she speaks about the millennials as very much, I think what you're saying really, is very much focus on the individual. Mm. You're very much individualistic. Individualism, she says, explains nearly all of the millennial generation. Mm. And then you kind of got, you know, they focus on standing out, feeling unique, having high expectations of themselves. So sometimes an overinflated opinion.
Yep.
They give a veneer of confidence, but they're not necessarily confident.
Yep.
They're desperate, though, to be accepted. Mm-hmm. You must always feel good about yourself, be happy. So there's that sense of entitlement, narcissism. Mm-hmm. They're generally more liberal on social and economic matters. They favour individual liberty. They were supportive of same-sex marriage here in the UK, so 73% of millennials voted for it, 15% opposed. Less likely to be religious compared to older generations, and they want to know if it works. Not necessarily whether it's true in terms of faith, but does it work, is what she says.
Okay.
And they focus on intrinsic rewards, such as a job that is interesting, where you can learn new things, where you can see results, rather than, actually, I just need to work for the... And she says work ethic is less than other generations. Yeah. They don't all work that hard.
Yeah. I think that all sounds fair.
So now, I think it presents.
So basically, they're lazy good for nothings.
Well, I don't want to put it.
But we want to evangelise you because we really love you.
Yeah. But I think, but it's interesting though, because actually, it's been on. But basically, how do we evangelise?
They sound like it's called the snowflake generation, snowflake, but that's a bit more gen. Pejorative. Which would suggest they're kind of weedy.
Yeah, they melt away when the pressure comes.
Mm-hmm. But that's more of a kind of media hype term. Probably not always helpful. Mm-hmm.
No, but it's probably reflective of the, especially the kind of work ethic, all of those kind of
it's
issues.
It's also that emotional, individual kind of emphasis, you know, the emphasis on how I feel and fulfilling myself and those sort of things.
Now,
let's talk about some of your bad things.
Are
you a baby boomer or are you generation?
No, I'm generation, whatever it is, X, Y.
Generation X.
Generation X.
Millennials are generation Y. Okay. And then iGen is a generation Z, the younger lot.
I'm X. And you're a baby boomer.
Are you sure? Are you sure you're Generation X?
I'm definitely a Generation X.
Yeah, no, I'm a baby boomer.
Anyway, you were saying, sorry.
Well, no, it just... one of the things that... the reason I've been thinking about it is, one, how do you pastor millennials? You know, because recognising that actually it raises lots of issues in the life of the church. You know, if you've got a generation who are struggling with worth ethic, who are individualistic, how does that connect with a community? How does that connect with serving? How does that connect with, you know, teaching them?
So they're less likely to take responsibility.
They're
less likely to be committed to the organisation.
Yeah.
They're more likely to be committed to particular friendships or particular interests, aren't they? So they're not going to think, here's an organisation, the church, and I can see how this organisation works. I need to be part of it. How do I participate in it? They won't be thinking that as a default in the same way that perhaps baby boomers or even Generation Xers might be.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to teach.
Well, I think, but the thing is, isn't it, as you teach scripture, if they want to know how... So that's how it got me started, thinking of pastoring. But then how do you evangelise? How do you reach out to a 20s, 30s generation who are very individualistic, who really are not necessarily connected, have not got any of the background that previous generations had because they probably didn't attend Sunday school, they're not hearing it at school. How do you reach out to them, engage with them, and how do you show them it works? So does this change how we do evangelism? Because you're unlikely to get them into a room where you, the old style preach to a room, I don't think. So how do churches connect? Podcast. Well, it's interesting, but podcasts are one way, aren't they? And I think part of ordinary is helping to show how faith works out in the everyday, you know, dealing with the big issues. So I think that is one way.
Also, people will tend to listen to podcasts because it's an individual experience in your headphones, in your car, whatever. Which kind of goes with the whole lifestyle thing. It's not a community experience. It's an individual thing. You load of individuals listening at the other end.
At the end of this, I'm going to get you to say a load of things that you think are brilliant about millennials, but carry on.
Yeah, yeah. Give us time to think. No, just yes.
What's good about them is that they're young. They've got that
young,
much
energy,
of life ahead
creativity.
Of them as an adult.
Young is inevitability. It's not that doesn't count. We're all young once.
Yeah, but they want to learn new things. All of those, there's lots of positive. Creative often learn new things.
There's clearly nothing great about baby boomers because it's not so. We're not the revival generation. We're the 60s and 70s generations who ended up, with the sexual revolution. So we've got nothing to be proud about.
So what I'm really hoping, Josh, is you're going to tell me now. How do I reach the millennials? How do you evangelise a group?
Oh, man.
Through art?
Through art. That's a wonderful... Yeah, through art, through technology... I think through, I don't know, Graham. Mark, you must have things written down on that list there that relate to your points. Otherwise, this podcast is going nowhere. If you're relying on me for the content, let's call it quits now.
I'm just trying to explore really. So, if they want to know it works, what do we do as a church to help them see that?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
I think you've got to, I mean, it's true of all generations, but I think particularly it's not so much, let's present an intellectual, coherent argument. Mm-hmm. It's that plus let's show how it works. Mm-hmm. Because we do believe Christianity both makes sense, but it also works in life. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of showing how it works in family life. So it's always true that this is important, but authentic Christian family life in the church is really key. Yeah.
But I think that then plays out in how we preach.
Yeah.
So I think... lots of times we can preach where we just declare a truth, you know, just tell them. But actually, I think increasingly with both the millennials and the iGen, you've got to start showing them how that truth connects, because it's easier just to declare the truth up the top, as it were, you know, explain what the passage says. But I think if we're going to have a concern for the millennials and pastoring them, but reaching them as well, and the iGen, you've got to spend a bit more time showing them how this works out, either in your own life or in their own in their lives. You know, what does this look like in the workplace? What is this?
Because we're the so what generation.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's more than, you know, this is true. Okay, yeah, it may be true, but how does it work? What does that look like? What does it mean to say, actually, I'm going to love my neighbor? Okay, well, what would that look like to really be loved, or to experience that and feel that? If that is true, that I'm called to do that, how does that work out? So I think it also means you've got to work harder, I think, at engaging one-to-ones. So I think you've got to somehow equip either the millennials or the generation above to be better at one-on-one-ing kind of the non-believer, building those, you know, friendships that actually allow them. Now, this is the kind of the quirk with the other generations, because actually in the Britishness, I don't think we like to really engage too much. You know, we want things at a distance. You know, we'll have a nice little meeting. But actually what I'm observing in some of our guys who are doing this is they're bringing their non-Christian friends into their homes that much more, because then their friends are now observing how they're doing life. Hold on a second, you're a believer, you're a young guy, you're a young couple. Gosh, this isn't just something you believe up here, it's a nice thing to hold to, but actually this shapes everything you do in your life, the decisions you make, how you treat your wife, how your wife treats you, how you're spending your money, the entertainment that you're using. So in other words, I think we've got to encourage guys to somehow connect one more in that way. Mm. I think, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking at me a little bit like...
No, I think, no, well, I think we're looking for all the answers from you. Bear in mind, with all this, the things that are true of millennials are probably true of the other age groups that are needed as well. But I think it's where the emphasis falls a little bit more. So for my generation and your generation, authentic Christian life is good, and hospitality and seeing it work is all good. I guess just by degree, we're a bit more of my generation. It was about the kind of weight of the argument and the persuasiveness of the argument. And we weren't so into the experience,
which is why you got the great books of, you know, I think McDowell, these guys who are kind of producing these apologetic books that were kind of working on the truth and presenting it as articulate arguments. Now, of course, those things are still true, but I don't think that's where you reach the millennial initially. I think you start elsewhere, and then they'll be brought in. Then they'll want to know.
Yeah.
Like I know you spent a lot of time reading those apologetic books, but I doubt that's where you started. You know, in the sense of, that's what the first connection made you a believer.
Yeah. But also the way that, I mean, I was an early adopter of lots of technology because I was in a technology company, so I'm not entirely representative, but a lot of people my age would not be sampling lots of stuff. It would be bigger chunks of listening to a program, reading a book, listening to a sermon, whereas particularly millennials are grazing all the time, lots of stuff on the internet and so on.
Yeah.
So the way you're reaching them is different as well.
I think my biggest thing that I would say is that I think our generation, my generation, is just lost in terms of purpose and meaning.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of people just don't know what the point is. What's the point? I go to school, I do all these exams. I do the exams to get into college. I do more exams to get into university. I do more exams to get a job. I then do a job until I die. What is the point? Where is the purpose? Where is the meaning? I think there is a void of purpose and meaning in the millennial generation. I see it in my friends. I see it in people coming after me, younger people. And I think that's a big deal in the way that we reach them, is to engage with that idea, to ask some questions of like, so why do you do that? And what do you think the point of life is? Why do you think that? Like, and just to start to question the meaning and the purpose and what, and you know, where real truth lies. You know, what do you want to waste your life? Working for some company, earning money, paying your bills and then dying? Or is there something more?
Absolutely. And help them to see that actually you may have to do that. But, you know, in terms of, there is a bigger purpose to it, and again, it's showing how it works, isn't it? You're not. This isn't just. life doesn't just happen like this. It happens like this for a reason, for a greater purpose, for a bigger agenda. Actually, yeah. there is something bigger on yeah. offer here than just what you're being told by the media.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in one sense, it's probably why climate change has got such a, because it gives them a purpose. There's a sense of agenda that we can get behind, because all the other big campaigns are pretty much, you know, at the end, as it were. They've kind of reached a lot of the heights of their equality and reach in one sense, but yeah. but Sonic here is there, so they're engaging,
but searching for that like meta narrative.
Yeah, no, but I think that's really helpful, because I think yeah. and again it's part of how we preach, you yeah. know, in the podcast. But I think one of the other things that we started in this church is testimonies, and I think testimonies yeah. do play a big part, because it's connecting, showing how this big truth meta narrative is worked out in one individual's life that is different to my life, but it's connected in that way. I think the other area that struck me as I was reading through those things of that millennials is they're desperate to be accepted, and yet you've got this playoff of individualism. So there's an individual being accepted as an individual, but how do you get them to, and of course ultimately we have the answer, because the answer is identity in Christ, you'll be accepted in him, but how do you then help them to be fill into the community? And I think that's the struggle. How do you reach the generally non-Christian 20, 30-year-old? Now, we have loads in God's goodness, 20s, 30s in our church, you know, and that's a real blessing. But how do we reach the non-20s friendships and bring them into a community where they feel loved, where they see the benefit of actually intergeneration? Because I think often that's lost. You know, so how are the intergenerations reaching and speaking with 20s, 30s to help them connect and bring part of?
Yeah. And I think we've got to use every possible platform technologically, you know, advertising wise, networks, human networks, that is, you know, connections that people have. And I think we need to just prayerfully keep encouraging our millennials to evangelize millennials, because our generation can only go so far. There has to be those friendships developed. Yeah. So part of our job as church leaders is equipping millennials to evangelize millennials and to, you know, share lots of stuff on the kind of social networks that they're on in the form that's going to work for them.
And I think there's a slight issue there for millennials in the fact that they think that you should be private about your beliefs and not push them on other people. There's a PC culture built into a millennial mindset that says, I shouldn't force you to agree with me about this, or I shouldn't tell you about it even. No.
And maybe lots of the ways we've historically taught evangelism in church is much more reaching a baby boomer, you know, where you're kind of truth articulate. And actually... It's drawing into community, drawing into our homes, drawing into friendships, you know, those kind of relationships, so that they're beginning to ask the question of why do you think the world is different, rather than the sense of, as you say, forcing an opinion in that way. Yeah. You know, it's dropping the stone in, that kind of argument thinking is trying to reach out. But I think the general place of this is we just want to be encouraging, particularly the millennials who are listening, who are probably the vast majority, you know, think about how you reach in your, you know, you understand your culture. How do you reach them? How are you speaking to your friends? Have you got them into your home? Are you using the resources that are actually abundant now to help in that way? Thinking about those areas that we've been talking about.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ordinary. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, if you want to reach out and ask us a question, then email us on ordinary@cchh.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. Join us again next time. We're going to be thinking about evolution. We're doing another follow-up from the Rhett and Link podcast about their deconversion, in which evolution was quite heavily featured. Following on from that, we have a great conversation with Simon Ward, who was COO of the British Fashion Council and also had a lot to do with London Fashion Week. We speak to him about aesthetic values and being a Christian in the world of fashion. So lots of good stuff coming up. Join us again next week.